Hey everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today we're going to continue our series on the 12 signs of the zodiac and talking about some of the great misconceptions that exist for each of the 12 signs. We are going to take a look at three common misconceptions about the sign of Capricorn in today's video. So this is something that I'm, you know, very passionate about, being a Capricorn moon myself, and having some Capricorns in my family and in my life. I've come to recognize that I think Capricorns are one of the more misunderstood signs of the zodiac. You've got some signs that, attract a lot of attention, like Scorpio. Capricorn is another sign that attracts a lot of attention. Usually it's negative attention. You find a lot of very negative stereotypes that exist about Capricorns. There's a few good ones too, but we're going to talk about three common misconceptions about the sign of Capricorn today. And then we're going to break this sign down on a little deeper level. It's Capricorn season right now, so it's a good time to do it. So let's dive in. So these are the three common misconceptions that I am used to hearing. Capricorns are heartless, hard-hearted, or lack emotion. That's the first one. Not necessarily a flattering stereotype. The second one is that Capricorns are all about goals and hard work. Climbing up the mountain toward your hard-earned goal, whatever it may be. And then my least favorite, and it's any one of these, though usually they come in combination, that Capricorn is a sign that is inherently all about the patriarchy or hierarchies or traditionalism or conservatism. In general, I hear those things all the time. Are there elements of truth? Yes, in all of these, there are elements of truth. There's the stereotypes exist because there's something a little bit true about them. But there's a lot more to this sign, and that's what we're going to try to unpack today. Well, first of all, let's just review that Capricorn is a feminine sign. It is an earth sign, so we can put that in sort of the yin category of signs. It is the home sign of Saturn, also the exaltation of Mars. And it was called the gateway of the gods, and a place that was associated the winter solstice in the northern hemisphere, and a place that corresponds with the opening of the winter season in zodiac speak. So it's a pretty diverse sign. It's a cardinal sign or a tropical sign. And there's, again, I think a lot that we get wrong about Capricorn, but you could probably put a couple of signs in the bin of most frequently stereotyped in ways that are probably further from the heart of the sign's meaning. I think Capricorn would be in there. So hopefully today we'll sort of, by unpacking this a little bit more, we'll get to know Capricorn better and learn some new things. I am going to also, in part, read you an article that I have just recently written for an astrological publication. I'm going to read you an excerpt from it because it's all about Saturn. And a lot of the misconceptions surrounding Capricorn really have to do with a very one-dimensional understanding of Saturn. A lot of the ways we understand signs in modern astrology have to do with misunderstandings of the planets that rule them. We'll unpack that as well. But let's take a look at the astronomy first. So I'm going to put my app up on the screen so that you can see it and just highlight a few things. So here's the celestial equator intersecting with the meridian. Here's the sun right about at the time of the winter solstice. Let's just step this forward just a little bit. You can see the sun kind of comes through this meridian line right here, about high noon on the winter solstice. What we're essentially saying is that relative to the equinox, the equinox, this is the lowest point of the sun's journey. When the sun comes down to this space in the sky, it's the Tropic of Capricorn, and it gets down, it's like 23 and a half degrees below the celestial equator, which is a projection of the Earth's equator out into space. So this lowest point in the sky, closest to Earth, from this point in the solar year, we are now at the darkest moment. This is all the symbolic language of the zodiac, the solar symbolic language, is from the northern hemisphere. But the language is, because it is symbolic and divinatory in nature, can be used by anyone anywhere. So zodiacal winter, we'll call it, begins when the sun reaches this point. From Libra down to Capricorn, Libra, Scorpio, Sagittarius, we have been in the yin of the yin half of the year, which is to say the darkening of the dark. We're on the dark half of the year where there's more darkness than light, and there's more darkness increasing every day. So this is yin's rising time, yin's power time. We get to Capricorn, the yin is at its maximal, but then what's happening is we hit this pivot where the light is going to start to return as the sun moves its way back up to that celestial equator. When it crosses that equator at the spring equinox, we'll have our Aries season opening up. And from that point forward, the sun will be above this line for the next half of the year, and we'll have more light than darkness in the 24-hour period. So that's the yang half of the year. Capricorn constitutes the deepest yin, but also the return of the light from within the darkness. Gradually, the sun now starting to work its way up. So it is from that exact astronomical picture that we often have so many of the symbolic elements of Capricorn that we've inherited. For example, when you have this idea that Capricorns are just sort of heartless and hardworking and ambitious, you'll often hear people say that that is because from this point of the winter solstice onward, the light is gradually moving upward, but from a lowly place. So it's like this hard climb up the mountain from the darkness into the light. And so this gives Capricorns this kind of, you know, ambition and hardworking, like the goat climbing up the mountain. And there's something to that. There definitely you can see, if you've gotten to know Capricorns, the Capricorns are also often very much about goals and hard work and climbing, you know, stubbornly but persistently upward toward the object of their desire or the goal, not afraid to put in the hard work like the mountain climbing goats. There's all that, and that's fine. And you'll get kind of like, well, it's a Saturn ruled sign, and there's this kind of heartlessness, emotionlessness. You are just climbing up toward your goal, and you don't really care, you know, if you're hurting yourself or others, if you're getting kind of Machiavellian. Doesn't matter. Just then, that's the stereotype. Can that be a true stereotype about Capricorn? Yes, it can. Saturn can be very persistent and dogged in the sign of Capricorn, can represent that kind of set my emotions aside, set my body aside, set how other people aside, and just sort of ruthlessly move my way toward my goals and so forth. When we associate some of that with the structures that we see in our societies, the people who want to get to the top at all costs, it's easy to associate that with the 1% of wealth in the world and the association of the 1% of the wealth in the world with the men who hold it. It's easy to associate that with the existence of, you know, traditionalism and people who have held, you know, dynasties of wealth and, you know, traditions and people who are going to hold on to their power or money at all costs. And so it's very easy to see where some of these words come from: patriarchy, hierarchy, traditionalism, conservatism. I'm just going to go with conservatism because I think that's it. Is it conservatism or is it conservativism? Someone tell me. Anyway, I think a lot of this stems from misunderstandings about Saturn. And to a certain extent, there is also, we have to remember that this sign is also the exaltation of Mars. So you have to think, when you're thinking about a planetary exaltation, one way of thinking about it that can help is to think this is a Saturn who also exalts Mars. If you're in the sign of Libra, this is a Venus that also exalts Saturn. if you're in Cancer, this is the moon that also exalts Jupiter. So, or in Aries, a good one, the Mars who exalts the sun. In Capricorn, you're talking about a Saturn that also, there's a way in which the sign exalts the qualities of Mars. And that tends to be where we pick up on the kind of ruthless, persistent, goal-oriented, because Saturn is not, it's in and of itself necessarily the ruthless, hardworking, perseverant, bulldozing, ambitious, you know, competitive, heartless type. It's through the exaltation of Mars in this sign that we often get those qualities. And it's fair, I'm not disputing that these, all of these qualities can certainly be a part of Capricorn's picture, Capricorn's celestial archetypal reality. But we should also know that there is a great deal of diversity contained in the sign of Capricorn. And a lot of it comes, you can't really understand it until you understand Saturn. So today I am going to tell you about some of the lesser known qualities of Saturn. This comes from an article that I've just been writing called The Mystical History of Saturn. So I'm just going to read you some excerpts from it. When I first began studying astrology, I remember the ways in which Saturn was frequently described: slow, conservative, the ruler of time, the taskmaster, restrictive, cold, hard, or harsh. Saturn was described as a traditionalist, resistant to change, but also as a symbol for hard work, maturity, and discipline or structure. In fact, if you survey some of the most popular astrology authors of the past century, you will find mostly the same descriptions of Saturn overall. Take, for example, Isabel Hickey's description in her famous textbook, Astrology, A Cosmic Science. Quote, Saturn is called the Lord of Karma, and inasmuch as it shows the area and qualities which we need to change and redeem, it is. The Hindus speak of Dharma as one's duty of responsibility in life. That is what Saturn represents in the birth chart. It indicates where our responsibilities lie and what our life's lessons must be. Similarly, the godfather of modern astrology himself, Alan Leo, once wrote, quote, Saturn restricts, limits, crystallizes, and binds everything, holding, restraining, fashioning, and solidifying all that comes under its sphere of influence. And so it goes. Saturn is that cold, hard teacher in the school of karmic hard knocks. This is what I had learned of Saturn and all of what I knew or understood of Saturn for many years until I began studying ancient astrology, as well as the history of the symbols of astrology in general. Interestingly, I will tell you guys, it was just as Saturn entered my own natal ninth house by transit, a house associated for thousands of years with mysticism, that I began to understand the rich mystical history of Saturn and of the sign of Capricorn itself. So I'll kind of skip around a little bit, but the first thing I just want to say is that these descriptions that I've just offered are pretty much the standard descriptions. And if those were all that we knew of Capricorn, hard, sort of heartless, goal-driven, stubborn, traditional, hardworking, oh, this is where your work lies in the chart, you know, these are your limits, or this is where you'll just sort of be stubborn and, you know, maybe like sort of conservative. Or this is like the taskmaster energy. And so, of course, it gets associated with, you know, all of the crazy sadomasochism of our modern era, the relentless drive towards success and material productivity. And I'm like, you know, that's kind of a bummer, isn't it? And I'm not saying that Saturn doesn't have some association with those themes, but it turns out that's not really at all what the traditional seven planets, the traditional understanding of Saturn was about. I actually spend some time in this article talking about one of the ways that how Saturn came to be associated with only these qualities. And that has a lot to do with the way that the traditional seven planets started to be treated in general with the advent of the outer planets. But I won't go into that. What I'll say here is this. Let's take a look at some of the historical mystical significations that belong to Saturn. This is what's going to set you free from some of those narrow, ironically narrow, stereotypes about the Saturn-ruled sign. Let's begin by exploring one of the most frequently used words associated with Saturn in ancient astrology, which is melancholy. In fact, in one of the most famous books ever written on the topic of melancholy, is titled Saturn and Melancholy. But when most people hear the word melancholy, they only think of depression or sadness. As it turns out, melancholy, which is Saturn's affliction, quote unquote, was an incredibly diverse phenomenon, as common in the lives of creative geniuses, artists, mystics, and great thinkers and contemplatives, as it was a common malady treated by the earliest doctors. Melancholy may involve depression, but it is also commonly associated with a kind of wistful longing for things beyond this world, with severe emotions, both positive and negative, with the multifaceted process of grieving, with dreams, hallucinations, delusions, and states of reverie. Melancholy is associated with insomnia, a preference for quiet spaces and vast viewpoints, as well as possession by gods or spirits. These states were in turn associated with mystics, artists, geniuses, scientists, great minds, deep personalities, as well as people who are deeply troubled, possessed by dark spirits, isolated, or depressed. Similarly, in Dante's Paradiso, Saturn ruled the seventh sphere of heaven, a realm where Dante encounters the spirits of people who dedicated their lives to quiet, monastic states of reverie, prayer, and contemplation, and the contemplation of higher worlds or realities. This is because Saturn was not merely the planet of order, structure, and limitation, and see, there are the stereotypes of Capricorn, but also the planet of horizons and thresholds. As the dimmest and most distant planet sitting on the edge of the sphere of the planets, the gods, and the numinous beyond, Saturn represented the yearning of the human imagination for more than the mundane, as well as the feeling of being cursed, limited, held back, or depressed by that which is earthly, mortal, and confining. But it was both. Saturn ruled the sign of Capricorn, which was also called the gateway of gods by ancient astrologers, a celestial portal associated with the separation of the soul from the body upon its death, returning to the divine realms beyond the earth. It is true that Saturn, just like the melancholy it was frequently associated with, represented something of limits, dread, existential anxiety, and the feeling of being trapped. But we cannot forget that Saturn simultaneously represented the urge or yearning present in the souls of those who dared to move beyond the horizons of the material world. That too was Saturn. Prior to the discovery of Neptune, it's safe to say that many of the symbolic features we now properly ascribe to Neptune belong to Saturn. For example, Saturn was traditionally associated with trades by the water, with oceans, and with the borders between land and sea. Just as a cosmic symbol, it sat on the edge of the two worlds, the realm of the gods and the numinous beyond, a watcher sitting on the borders. And while it's true that Saturn was associated with time, winter, and death, it's also true that through Saturn's relation with impermanence, the planet came to be associated with mystical and spiritual realization, which cannot be found unless one has come to recognize and accept the reality of mortality and time. Saturn was therefore associated as much with the life of prayer and quiet contemplation or meditation as it was with the constraints of the material world or time itself. In Indian astrology, Saturn was also associated with outcasts, and in ancient Greek, the word melas at the root of melancholy also meant dark or black, or a person of dark or black disposition. As the gatekeeper between worlds, Saturn was thus associated with both those people or ideas contained within the walls of the city, the establishment or status quo, as well as those people or ideas cast out by the city walls. And for this, outside of or cast out of the city walls. And for this reason, Saturn was also associated with heretics and malcontents. But it is important to note that Saturn signifies the black sheep, the outcast, the heretic, the rebellious reformer, as much as Saturn signifies the establishment or tradition itself. Saturn was a remarkably dual citizen of the planetary pantheon in this regard. In fact, there were debates as to whether Saturn was masculine or feminine. Not surprising, and sometimes was called neuter, as in could go both ways. Not surprisingly, oppositions were said to be of the nature of Saturn. The opposition as an aspect was said to be of the nature of Saturn, whose signs Capricorn and Aquarius stand in opposition to those of the Sun and the Moon, Cancer and Leo, in the classical Thema Mundi chart of the world that ancient astrologers used as a teaching device. Don't forget that the ability of Saturn to hold dual positions simultaneously is also represented in its exaltation in the sign of Libra, the balance. And just like an opposition includes two realities simultaneously with the potential for polarization or union, so did Saturn in its very nature contain fundamentalists and heretics. Contemplation of vast realities and depression and constraints of the material world. Black sheep and the establishment, limitation and the mystical yearning for something more. These are the curses of people who dealt with melancholy, who dealt with being a child of Saturn. Learning about these diverse significations changed my life as one born with the moon afflicted in Saturn's sign of Capricorn in the ninth house of religion, mysticism, spirituality. When I first began to understand these mystical nuances, I kept thinking there is so much of Saturn in the outer planets. It is so ironic that Saturn has been relegated to such narrow and limited use by them. See, once the outer planets come in, the entire pantheon of traditional planets are broadly referred to a little pejoratively because we have the outer planets being called trans-Saturnian, as though they are all more mystical and beautiful than Saturn. And there are little quotes along these lines. For example, Raymond Harrison once wrote, early modern astrologers who wrote similar things, to those who can respond to their very high vibrations, Uranus, Neptune, and probably Pluto, denote the more highly cultivated types of humanity. It has been suggested that both Uranus and Neptune are the spiritual correspondents or counterparts of Mercury and Venus. They are probably in touch with elements of thought and feeling that are wholly inconceivable to the more mundane types of Venus and Mercury. So you have to understand that early modern astrologers also grouped everything about the outer planets in contrast to the traditional seven by calling them trans-Saturnian. Saturn thus becomes broadly associated with everything that's sort of mundane and limited and worn out about traditional astrology itself, even though these astrologers had very limited, next to zero, of the full spectrum of ancient astrological source texts available to them. They literally didn't know what they were talking about. Not only that, but to say that these newly discovered planets are more spiritual than the traditional seven, just smacks of a kind of philosophical arrogance. And Saturn becomes emblematic of that. At any rate, learning about all these diverse significations, I kept thinking there's so much of Saturn in the outer planets. In particular, I kept thinking, well, Saturn is not identical to Neptune. The two remind me of each other more than I ever thought they would. Out of curiosity, I decided to look at Neptune's discovery chart to see how it was configured with Saturn. And I was amazed to find that the two planets were in a nearly exact conjunction at the time of Neptune's discovery. I've since heard many astrologers say Saturn was just helping Neptune come into the realm of form, but I tend to believe that their conjunction speaks more to their ancient co-presence symbolically. Consider, for example, that traditionally the 12th house, which was also called the joy of Saturn, is now the house modern astrologers associate with Neptune through its conflation with the sign of Pisces. And I go on to talk a little bit more about the 12th house and all the significations that are both Saturnine and Neptunian simultaneously. But the point that I'm trying to get at is that Saturn is deeply misunderstood. In the way that we now understand Neptune in contrast to Saturn, like Saturn is limited and Neptune is the mystical beyond, actually both of those qualities were wrapped up in the symbolism of Saturn, and people who dealt with afflictions of Saturn were people who dealt with the acute feeling of polarization between the two dimensions of reality, the limited and the limitless, the establishment and the avant-garde, or the anything that exists outside the walls of the establishment, that polarity, that dichotomy. Remember, Saturn rules oppositions themselves, is contained in Saturn. I'll leave you to think about it, I say, but I'm not going to die on the hill of my comparisons between Saturn and Neptune, but I am convinced that we need to think more carefully and patiently about the diverse symbolism of Saturn in general. I can't back down about that one. To me, not even the narrowness of Saturn should be narrowly considered. Ancient astrologers and philosophers didn't, so why should we? After all, it's through the narrow lens of our first telescopes that we learn to see beyond, and in the same way, as a monk each day, though I sit on a narrowly defined square mat, if I patiently attend to this threshold, there is just so much coming through. So let's revisit, with all of this in mind, the common misconceptions. Are Capricorns heartless? No, anything but. They're melancholic. Melancholic means that oftentimes melancholic. Sometimes there's heartlessness. I'm not going to deny that. But more often than not, what is seen as heartless is more melancholic. Melancholic does not mean that a person is without emotions. It means that their emotions are often severe, sometimes quieter, broodier, heavier, darker, existential. Earth is not something as an element that is devoid of emotion either. Earth is all elements, you could say. Not water doesn't have the market cornered on emotion. It's one of the most stupid misconceptions about elemental philosophy that exists in modern astrology, in my humble opinion. Maybe not so humble, I don't know. But because, listen, the truth is that Earth is a mode of relating. Earth is a mode of emoting. Earth is a mode of thinking. Earth, the elements are a way in which we do just about everything that's human. That includes the way that we emote. The Saturnian way can be cut off. It can numb itself, or it can struggle to express emotions in a free, easy, warm, cuddly way, but is not devoid of emotion. It tends to be melancholic. That means that emotions are often severe, dark, existential, but by dark, we don't mean evil. By dark, we mean that there is an acute awareness of the tension between the boredoms of life and the romantic imagination that comes with that boredom. You know, when you're a kid and you go, what should I do? And your parents say, I don't know, you come up with something. I'm bored. Well, there's not boredom. There's just boring people. You know, Capricorn is crushed by such a statement, because so much of the most beautiful artwork, the most beautiful inventions, the most beautiful social and cultural developments come not from some free-flowing state of positive or easy emotion. It comes from the acute way in which we face and deal with the dichotomy between earth and heaven. And when earth is felt acutely, so is heaven. It's implicit. It's implicit in the very longing. It's implicit in the feeling of being captured. Now, could you unconsciously be captured by the earthy Saturnine reality to the extent that you are depressed and can't move outside of the limitations or constraints of the earthly realm, whether that's your ambitions or practicality? Or yeah, it could. But also, many Capricorns feel very wild, deep, intense, existential things, and they also dream and imagine, and there's a romance, a romantic quality that comes with the edginess of that, those severe melancholic states. So are Capricorns heartless? No, they're melancholic, and understand that melancholy is often highly creative, highly romantic, and feels emotions very acutely, though often works with them inside of something a little bit more contained, in the same way that contemplatives, mystics, meditate, people who meditate or pray in quiet solitude are not emotionless. It could be might look austere, but as someone who meditates every morning, as someone who's taken, you know, the householder monastic vows, I can tell you that even though my meditation, as I said in the piece that I read, my meditation place may be narrowly defined. There's a discipline or structure to what I'm doing, but the range of things felt, seen, worked with, into, through, in that narrow little space is profound. Saturn has always included that range of experience that can only be accessed in some way to the extent that the limitation is felt simultaneously. That is not heartless, right? Capricorns are all about goals and hard work. Yeah, okay, so could there be this overly rigid, practical, earthy, you know, earthbound ambitiousness? And yes, there could be that. That is part of what Saturn can represent. But don't forget that Capricorns are often profoundly creative. Think, for example, of J.R.R. Tolkien, creator of Middle Earth, an entire world, an entire fantastical world, Capricorn in the fifth house. You're thinking about Capricorn often way too much through the lens of the practical earthly achievement drive, maybe a little bit too much of Mars's exaltation. Instead, remember that Capricorns are also profoundly imaginative, deeply existential. They don't necessarily show it as openly as, say, their counterpart Cancer, but it is nonetheless, there is an alembic and some profound stuff cooking within it. And a lot of it is deeply romantic, deeply felt. And the creativity is so much more than the words, goals, and hard work. Finally, Capricorn is all about the patriarchy, hierarchies, traditions, and so forth. No, this is my least favorite one because, you know, what is Pluto in Capricorn all about? People, oh, it's just the establishment is being taken apart or it's being amplified or something like that. It's like, just as a Capricorn moon myself, I'm like, God, just the lack of imagination, you know, just drives me nuts. So remember that Saturn, does Saturn represent the establishment? Yes. But Saturn in general also represents outsiders. Melancholics were often outsiders, heretics, black sheep, those marginalized, those outside the city walls. Saturn is not so much the insider and the establishment and the wall as it is the watcher sitting on the gateway between the inside of the city and outside of the city. It will just as much define a heretic, a malcontent, someone who is deeply misunderstood, a punk rocker. It will just as easily represent the existential angst of one who does not fit in as much as Saturn and Capricorn will represent those that do. And if unless you get that, you're not going to really deeply appreciate the fullness of Saturn or Capricorn. Aquarius, a little different. We'll be talking about that one in the next video. But still, a lot of the same misconceptions exist about Aquarius, and it's a lot of it is rooted in misunderstandings about Saturn. Think, for example, about these individuals. Michelle Obama, Martin Luther King Jr., Muhammad Ali. Here are African-Americans who are reformers, who are boundary breakers, who are advocates for the outsider, the black sheep, the marginalized. So oftentimes, Saturn ruled people. People with Capricorn suns in their chart are not just, you know, okay, you have Jeff Bezos, right, as a Capricorn sun. Yeah, there's that too. You know, there's the billionaires and the, you know, an Amazon and okay, so that's there. But there's also people, listen to this list. David Bowie. Tell me that David Bowie, tell me that you can't feel that existential, melancholic, dark, spacey, romantic, imaginative angst in David Bowie's, you know, space oddity. How about Jared Leto, Timothy Chalamet, dark, brooding, intense, deep, imaginative. These are the melancholic heartthrobs, right? That's Capricorn. Marilyn Manson, highly creative, powerful, dark, you know. Is there a darkness? Is there an angst? Yes, I'm not a Marilyn Manson fan, by the way. I think he might have even done some pretty sick stuff. But, you know, you get the feeling. How about Newton? Isaac Newton, he was deemed a heretic by the Anglican Church. Pretty sure that he dealt with a stigma his whole life. How about Joan Baez, an activist who was quite content to be labeled by the mainstream as other, as an artist? Janis Joplin, Capricorn. Intense, powerful stuff came out of Janis Joplin. Think about that for a second. Stephen Hawking. Here's like, he's,
you know, if you ever saw that movie that came out about his life, the actor who played him was just great. I can't remember his name. Here's Stephen Hawking, the ultimate outsider, weirdo, inventor. He is famously defying the Christian institutions of the world, even up to the time of his death and the way he talked about God and science. A lot of these people also will ride the line between the establishment and the realm of those who are marginalized. They'll have this dual citizenship, and that's very Saturnine. Remember that Saturn rules Libra, the place of the balance that can hold two opposite things in some kind of equal tension. That's part of what oppositions imply. And while you can have polarization, you're in and you're out. Here's the wall, here's the concern, here's the establishment, and you're out. That can be a very Saturnine thing. There are plenty of Saturnine examples of people who are all about the establishment, tradition, and shun whoever is different. But there are also just as many people who will be on the other side of that city wall, and their planet is Saturn. And think about artists like Edgar Allan Poe. Is it dark? Yes, it's melancholy, but it's profoundly emotional at the same time. So don't think it's heartless. David Lynch, Capricorn. You know, J.R.R. Tolkien, Capricorn. LeBron James, if you want to think about that. Here's the guy who, you know, he becomes, he's an emblem of success in the sports world. He also grew up, you know, basically a poor kid in Akron. Those kinds of, and he's like the ultimate example of that kind of exalted, you know, he's got a son in the sign of an exalted Mar, of Mars's exaltation. So the famous athlete, hard one, like really famous for his hard work and perseverance. And he doesn't age, you know, it's like, he's like Tom Brady in that respect. But nonetheless, one of the things that he's done over and over again, and you can debate, I'm not trying to, you know, romanticize anyone here. I'm just kind of telling the story. And one thing that he's done over and over again is he has built schools for kids who are poor. So as much as I understand, Nostradamus, considered, you know, a heretic, I believe, famous for being a kind of dark prophetic figure, Capricorn. So my point is there's a bit more to this sign than heartless, hardworking, and patriarchal. Okay. So I hope that you all have picked up on that. And if ever you want to read a book about the history of Saturn and its mystical side, I highly recommend the book Saturn and Melancholy. And I can't remember the author off the top of my head. It's a famous book. It's a little pricey, but well worth the read if you want to read an academic text about the history of Saturn in literature, art, astrology, and its association with melancholy, which was a curse for some, but also the sign of creative genius, romantic imagination, contemplation, mysticism, prayer for others. So keep all of that with you. And remember that this feminine sign of Capricorn is intensely creative, deeply emotional, but sometimes in earthier, grittier ways. And hopefully this fills out your understanding of this beautiful sign of the sea goat. So that's what I've got for today. Hope you guys enjoyed this. Hope you guys are having a great week. Mercury is going to turn retrograde later this week. We'll be talking about that. Also, I think I've got a case study chart example I'm going to show you guys this week. So lots of good things to come. Glad to get back into this series. I kind of put it aside during the Kickstarter. So thanks for your patience. I know some people were asking, when are you going to do the next one? So we've got two more left in this series. So I look forward to doing Aquarius next. All right, take it easy, everyone. Bye.